Hello and welcome to the Blues Guitar Show podcast with me, Ben Martin, from thebluesguitarshow.com. In today's very special episode, I catch up with Marco Cinelli, one quarter of the Cinelli brothers. He's the guitarist and singer. I catch them whilst they're on tour just before they shoot off to Portugal. The Cinelli brothers are widely regarded as being one of the best live blues acts in the UK as well as the European scene. They've been touring all over Europe supporting their new album called Villa Duke Joint. They've been nominated for, I think, over three UK Blues Awards, and Marco himself is an absolutely phenomenal guitarist. I thoroughly recommend checking out Villa Duke Joint as well as all of the other good stuff that they've got over on their website, or you can find it on Apple Music. In this conversation, we talk about pretty much everything from writing to what gear he uses to what techniques he's in favour of, how he got as good as he got at guitar playing, life on the road, living in a band, touring all over the UK and Europe, just all sorts of stuff. It's a really great conversation, and I really appreciate Marco giving us some of his time, especially in the midst of their crazy touring schedule. So I hope you enjoy. Here's my conversation with Marco Cinelli. Are you guys on tour right now?
Yes, we are. We are. Next stop is Portugal. And the one before that was Estonia.
Oh, wow. So, how's it been?
Very good. Very good. So far, so good. We've been hitting some great stages. Especially Estonia was massive. It was like, I think, easily 5,000 people. It was a great festival. It's called Augusti Blues.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you heard?
Yeah, I have. Very cool.
Yeah, and an amazing landscape as well. And tomorrow, Portugal.
Fantastic. So where are you right now? Are you in back in the UK in between, or are you in Portugal?
I'm in UK at the moment for a few gigs, a few things. Like we play at the Dusty Blues Club. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
Great. It's a legendary place.
Yeah.
It's our second time. Mm-hmm. Third time because me and my brother played there doing the rhythm section of another artist. So it's the third time for us. Mm-hmm. We absolutely love it. It was packed. We knew most of the people. It's a great, great environment.
Yeah, so. Awesome. Cool. So where
are you based?
I'm actually based near Reading.
Okay, so, not far from where we live, me and my brother.
Yeah,
we
have, yeah. But, I used to do a lot of gigging in London, but I haven't, past couple of years, haven't done much in London or abroad.
Uh-huh.
But it's cool to see you guys are so busy. It's like the list of dates you guys have is a pretty full-on schedule, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit of we got lucky for the kickback after the pandemic and stuff like that. We had a lot of requests and we got lucky this time to try to squeeze everything in a way that is human, not too hectic. Like, of course, there's a lot of traveling going on, but it's okay. It's okay. The conditions are fair, so it's quite okay.
One of the things that's I think really cool about you guys is that you have a real DIY kind of approach. I saw an interview you did where I think you said you're quite an indie setup at the moment. You do a lot of your own merch stuff, and do you do all your own driving and everything? Is that all?
Yes. We just bought a van, and my brother is absolutely in love with the van. He's a great driver, mm-hmm. and in the first place, he doesn't let anyone else drive because it's his thing. He's very happy about it, and he's a great driver. He can hit 8 hours straight, no feeling the need for a change. It's just like, for him, driving is a bit recharging. It's just absolutely perfect because I can stay on his side by him and do all the other works, like the phone work, the emailing. If he has something in his mind, he says, have you texted this one? Ah, yes, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. So it's a great team this way.
Yeah, and so does that mean you're also booking all your own shows? Do you have a booker?
We started by yes, exactly. No, we have a few bookers here and there that help us out. We have a few friends booker in the UK. We just come up with like proposition for festivals and gigs, and a few abroad. We have one in Spain, one in the Netherlands. You know, it's more like friends than like official booking agency. We don't have exclusivity with anyone, you know. It's just like, yeah. You know, or like somebody saying tipping, like, you should go play at that festival, here's the contact, or, you know.
It's cool, man. You guys kind of run it like a proper old school band, you know, get a van, hit the road.
If you could talk about old school, because back in the days, you know, there was a big label that organized everything. Well, you know, the concept of indie band, although looks old school, is quite modern, I think. Mm-hmm. Because back in the days, the musicians were solely called on duty to do music or live performance or
the other stuff,
or record, not even compose, you know, just mm-hmm. record and tour.
Yeah, yeah.
And sleep and now eat and now tour. Look good. It's my brother and I, we spend the most of the time doing what the label did to you back in the day. But we did, my brother is an excellent video editor and I'm a producer. I'm an engineer also. I can edit like audio. He uses Photoshop and I don't know. I'm good in doing the PR. He's great in dealing on the phone. You know, we just like, we specialized and we do the whole work.
Yeah. Two of us, well, one of the things I think I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you recorded the last album, Villa Jukebox, with one mic.
Yes, correct. Right.
How did you set that up?
So basically, if I came with the idea to do something like not very expensive, mm-hmm. I wanted to do something home cooked that did a sound home cooked, because after Babe, Please Set Your Alarm, the first record, we had so many praises like for the sound. I didn't want to end up doing an album that was whose average was like below the first one. I always mm-hmm. want to do something that is better or different, but on the same level at the very least. So it was a hard task just to try to obtain a very cool sound with one ribbon microphone in the living room of our house. So I started with the idea, let's do it, you know, let's find the mic and let's see if it inspires me. I thought that any mic could work if positioned in a proper way and you not crank up with the preamp and a little boost here and there of frequency, stuff like that. But it took me 3 months to understand how the mic works to get the best sound of it. Because sometimes the drums are too loud. We needed to screen the drums.
Well, I was going to say, a ribbon mic, they're quite sensitive, right? Because you can break the ribbon inside it.
Yeah. This is a modern mic. It's the MTR from Rode. It's called, it's a relatively cheap microphone. It costs a little more than £400. You know, it's not that inaccessible.
Yeah,
we thought about like renting one old vintage mic, stuff like that, but just the fact to deal with this vintage stuff, you know, it's crazy, because you may end up damaging the mic if you don't care, you're not careful. So this particular ribbon mic has a great it's very responsive after 1 meter of distance, but if you're too close, you may lose some sound sometimes. I just found out in the middle of the session that basically if you give 30 centimeters more, it breathes more, the sound swells more. It's strange how it works, you know. And there's absolutely nothing on the side. So whether all the amps were all aligned on the back of the mic and the drums mostly on the side, so it was really screened, you know. Once you understand how it works, you're just like, okay, I know exactly how many inches far from the mic the bass player should be, cool. Stuff like that.
Actually the first thing I came across of you guys was a video you put on YouTube. I think it was just called Blues Band from London, and it was a video of you guys playing in what looked like a kind of storage unit, and I heard it and I thought, oh holy shit, how do I not know about this band? And you guys, I think you opened with a version of Baby Please Don't Go, right? I mean, you guys are a fantastic live band, obviously. I think you're kind of getting quite well known as being like one of the best live bands in the country, certainly. How was it when you were recording live? Because presumably with one mic, you know, everyone's got to be pretty on it.
Yeah, I mean, we needed to adjust. We grew up a lot after this session, you know. There were some key sessions in our career that really made the band do the step up. Because, okay, we have good hearts, all of us. We love the blues. We know what a good band should sound like, but we don't necessarily have it right away. You know, there's no secret, really. It's just like we have the passion for the good sound and stuff like that. So you see that there is an honesty in doing what we do, but it's just trying out. For example, Billajuk joined the record. He really did this, was a good training for the band. I feel after that session that lasted more or less 3 months, you know, we got better, much better, because we could understand each other, the dynamics, because we were like recording all a bunch of takes and listening back and for days. So these just went in and just wrote something in the band's DNA. You see what I mean? And just like we could understand each other better. We know the dynamics, we know the nods, we know the phrases. And that's it. The concert you are referring to was like Coming to a Garage Near You. That was the original name. And it's actually our garage.
Oh, cool.
We wanted to do something exceptional. I think like playing in a garage and being having a great sound is something. It is something indeed, because if you can have like the pockets in a garage, which is an horrible sound, you know, it's just the horrible sound, the most horrible sound.
And it looked really good as well. Did you have like just one person with a camera or a few people?
Just one. One guy. I think it was Colin Burns, my guitar tech. He was there, just like giving the gimbal and my iPhone. So just do the take. We recorded a track. It's enough for a blues band, a track. You just need to, I don't remember if it was a track or 16 track, because sometimes what I do, I take two laptops with two sound audio device for a track each, and I'll put a bunch of light. And I blend them in one only project. You know, I may put on all the region in phase, it just aligned very well. And I don't remember if it was an 8 or 16 track, but it sounds very good. It's quite honest, you know, I like the raw sound of it. So it's when you mix it, you just, I start mixing from a general compression that squeezes everything in, and then I move the single sounds to just to what I want, if this is required compression or a little bit distortion and stuff like that, you know. And is that what you asked? I felt like it, didn't I?
Oh yeah, no, it was. what was the guitar you were playing in that one? It was a is it an Airline Tuxedo? Is that what you were
yes.
playing in the video?
And yes.
You don't use a pick, right? You play fingerstyle. Did you, when you first started playing, did you play acoustic guitar first, or did you start off straight on electric? What was your kind of
I started straight with the electric, with a pick, like anybody else. The only difference is that I'm left-handed. This really, so you understand this is quite different for left-handed who start playing guitar right-hand. Because at least for me, there always been a big impediment for me with the right hand to try to nail the staccatos at very fast speed. You know, that when you do phrases and you want to just phrasing like Pat Martino, all the stuff, I always found it very hard, harder than anyone else, at least. Of course, I could achieve stuff. And I always felt like I need my dose of like routine technique to be able to pull out the phrases I want, just because my right hand is very behind my left hand.
Right.
Until the moment, I think I was 18 years old or 19 years old, it happened to me that I saw Derek Trucks live. And that had a great impression on me, the way he could like pull a funky rhythm, most of all, just like doing a sort of, it looked like it was like doing some rumba feel, even or some classical guitar, flamenco, you know? It felt to me like you moved the wrist to say, oh, he's so tight. And that was the first sign. Then I saw Jeff Beck as well live. And all the chemistry he could achieve with just the hands, you know, like reaching the knobs of the volume and the vibrato. These two episodes, I said, you know why? Maybe I should try to play. I love the fact that I could play everything, everything with just the pick, just the fingers without the pick. And I tried straight away. I quit the pick one day from another. And it took me quite a while to be able to do everything I could, like solo, comping. But it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
They used to do is the choice of style because I wanted a sound that was like a trademark for the Cinelli brothers that wasn't a sound that you overheard in time, like the usual amazing Strat sound, the usual amazing Taylor sound. But for how amazing it is, it's just that sound. Just like, I want people to say, oh, I want this guitar is glossy. Is like, okay, looks like a single coil, but sounds like a Strat, but it's like, you, I don't know, tempting, you know?
Yeah.
I've been looking to Silvertone, to be fair with you, in the beginning. You know, Silvertone guitars and Subaru guitars. These are great guitars. Mm. And then I saw online this Airline Tuxedo that looked amazing. This color orange, like, oh, this deserves a try. The problem is that back then when I, there wasn't few guitars in Europe already because it's from, I think the brand is from the States, it's from Chicago or something, the Eastwood. I was on a trip to the States and I found someone on Craigslist who sold the guitar. So I bought it. That's it. I bought it and I bought it. We gave ourselves an appointment in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee, in Wisconsin. It was in the Harley Davidson Museum. It was quite cool. We traded there. It was quite nice. That's it. The final setup was just to bring the strings, thicker strings, much thicker than anyone else's, like 13 and indie. Everything is tuned down one tone. So that's the final sound of the Cinelli brothers.
To tune down and for the thicker strings, like why do you feel that's better for you?
Because the guitar is short scale, feels like a toy in your hands. When you play, it's just like a toy. It doesn't feel like a very sturdy guitar.
Mm.
It feels amazing, but as soon as you hit the D, it gets deeper when you do like some acoustic or rum or boogie or, I don't know, some Latin organ stuff like that. Immediately, you feel like it's vibrating more. It gives you more satisfaction, more pleasure. So I kept it in D. I thought C may be too low for this kind of stuff, really, but D can work very fine. Also, D is a very good key for me when I sing around the blues scale on D. So there's a lot of compositions in D, obviously, that originated out of that setting, you know?
Yeah, of course. And when you say D, are you talking drop D or open tuning D?
It's drop D. But all the strings are dropped D, yeah? Not all, just the sixth.
Drop everything down.
Yeah, yeah, it's a standard tuning, one tone down.
Oh, cool.
Minus two.
Do you pull your slide in standard tuning?
It's great. I mean, I always did slide mostly in standard tuning because I couldn't afford bringing two guitars to show. So I used the central set of strings, the G triad, you know, the G and B, to just play. That's great for slide. You need three strings really to play slide open.
Yeah,
so the triad. That's what you need, and the rest you can adjust it a little bit. I don't think for what I do is required more. Of course, the open tuning is great because it's broad, it's wide. But Jeff Beck does like slide regular tuning.
Actually, he does a lot of.
There are trucks can do it in any tuning. He's got a couple of different tunings. Yeah. it depends on the sound you want. You know, if on Elmer James, you almost 90%, you need to tune down open tuning. You know.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? That's like the trademark of the sound, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when you guys are approaching writing an album like Villager Joint, what's the kind of writing process?
Well, To be fair with you, I've just like I always written songs in a different style than the blues. I don't want to claim to be a blues like writer, because we were like copying the grooves of the what we love and just put down some lyrics that it sounds like authentic. You see what I mean? Like, oh, I like this cover. No, actually, it's our songs, but it's a mocking process. Mm-hmm. You see, just like, I like this vibe here. Of course, it's completely restyled because it doesn't have the intent, the old intention. Just have the same vibe, the same feel, and the same like words or poetry in it. The same sort of, that reminds me, it's just a word of copying, really, or emulating, if you allow me. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing really new. But later, like Village of Joint, it was like, okay, let's do a boogie, you know? All right, let's do this. Let's do, I think we need to shuffle now, because a great blues album has like a couple of rhythms that are very important there in it, like a good shuffle, like Texas style, or Chicago style, you know, or jump, and a rumba feel, and this and this and that. So let's make songs out of this rhythm, basically, you know. When I think about a blues record, I say, okay, a record to be interesting and to let listeners listen from beginning to end, you must have this, a piano song, and this, a ballad. And so it's very, it varies, and it's interesting. Otherwise, it's just like the same thing. It might not be taken just to, of course, if you, Howlin' Wolf can do that, you know, can have all two, two tune. You can have 15 songs of Howlin' Wolf doing that, and you never get bored, because it's Howlin' Wolf, of course. Knowing that it's just the Cinelli brothers, you may vary the rhythm a little bit in there. And then trying to make something that it sounds blues. The only thing I might say, though, is just like, we always wanted the lyrics to sound authentic as possible, but with a touch of modernity that people from the blues will understand, that it's just like, okay, these guys are doing a sort of clan d'oeil, to say, like a sort of a reference to the greatest of the past, but they had in their own sauce, their own way, in a cute way. That's what I hope it happens, you know?
Yeah, that definitely comes across. Do you jam a lot when you kind of practice together? Do you do a lot of jamming?
No, not really. I think we have clear ideas. If JJ, for example, the other guitar player, comes with that, I like this sound, and he starts to like doing the sound, so my brother understands that we jam a little bit on the sound. Mm-hmm. Some I can record the sound, so just to impress it, like to have it recorded and remember it, and then I'll think about it on a song the next day, so how it should go, what lyrics should have, to make it interesting, you know. And some, that's it. But there's only a couple of occasions where we used to jam to song, and the jam became a song, you know, just right. Like, let's jam. Sometimes you have the feeling, yeah, you're there, you're rehearsing, and they say, let's dedicate the last half hour to jam. Let's see what happens then. But me and my brother, mostly, like, during the pandemic, we were jamming a lot, because I was about an Hammond, and in duo, we could jam for hours during the night. Oh, cool. You know, so I stopped because I needed to practice some bass, and so we'll jam rhythms, and I have a bunch of recordings of that, and that's some very nice moments. I hope I will recycle that or something new. Yeah.
So the band has expanded quite a lot in the last couple of years, right? So you've got, so I think since the blues band in London, you were a four piece there. What's the kind of setup at the moment for your live shows?
Yeah, it's still a four-piece, but we, you know what is written? It's written on the rider, you know? Four-piece band, but gear for seven-piece band.
Yeah, because everyone just seems to do multiple instruments, right?
Exactly. Now, the three at the front, we're all three guitar players, you know? Yeah. But we can, on just one moment, we play guitar simultaneously, the three of us, and there's no bass, you know? For the rest, like me, I'm between piano, keys, and guitar. JJ is a harmonica and guitar, and Steve is guitar and bass. So depending on the sound, it's very like the Beatles like approach, you know, what's required here? A bass player who's available. Who's that gonna think, okay, you do the bass in here, you know?
That's so cool. That, I mean, and JJ's a phenomenal harmonica player.
Like, he is.
Really, really, such a big sound, isn't it?
He is. And he's just there. He never failed to make the right note at the right place. Mm. Just harmonica can be quite heavy instrument, especially if overplayed.
Mm.
And the absence of the harmonica is just to give some notes on the right moment and impress everybody. That's what I love the most about harmonica. And JJ is a guy who never plays until he feels that this is the time to play, you know?
Yeah. But he also has, he has really good tone when he plays harmonica. Like sometimes he listens to like some old Bob Dylan stuff when the harmonica, you kind of go, whoa. But I mean, he's real control, JJ.
Yeah. I mean, we argue a lot, me and him, about the tone of the harmonica, but he always end up like with the best tone, because I think the harmonica, like the treble down, you know, all muffled, I think about that. But he insists in saying, no, we need some treble here, some treble here. And I let him do. Mm-hmm. And he was always right. Now we tour, he has this amazing amp. I must say, the Vibro King, it's a big ass amp. But it's the best amp ever for harmonica. It's just like insane. The tone he has is just crazy good. The Vibro, he uses the Vibro King now for the harp.
Oh, cool. And he has one of the, he has a handheld harmonica mic, right?
I'm just interrupting this episode to let you know about the Blues Guitar Show Plus membership. Plus members get access to weekly lessons each Friday, complete with tabs and downloads. For just $5 a month, you'll get instant access to nearly a year's worth of guitar lessons covering finger picking, fretboard theory, soloing, improvising, slide, and much, much more. If you're tired of bouncing around on YouTube trying to pick up bits of information from here and from there, and you find it hard to commit to regular lessons, this is for you. Details of how to join are in the description below. Now back to the episode.
Yes. I don't know the brand, but he changes a few. He changed a few mics here and then, and now I think he's found his own bullet. He's very happy with it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when you guys tour, do you just take one guitar with you? That's it. Just one guitar.
No, we take two. Mm-hmm. Me and JJ take two guitars each. I take the Airline and a 335, Gibson 335. And JJ has this Eternal, which is a replica of SG for left-handed. He's left-handed and playing left-handed.
He plays left-handed, right,
yeah. And he has a Tele.
Got a Telecaster. Mm.
Yeah, very nice Tele. He also has a, what's that called? Dan Electro, I think it is. I don't remember. Yeah.
That's
a very good one.
You don't use any pedals either, right? You just go straight into the amp?
Yes. Yeah, when we have our own amps, mostly straight into the amps.
Yeah.
So, but when we tour, for example, tomorrow we go to Portugal, I don't know which condition are the amps that we will give. They're new. Of course, if they're new, they're hard to crack, right?
Yeah.
There's one pedal. Me and JJ use the same pedal, and sometimes we give it to Steve too. It's the King Tone. You know the King Tone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's just an amazing pedal. The Blues Power, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a sort of, you know, the Dualist, right?
It's
a very successful pedal. But the Blues Power is amazing with a Strat and a Fender. It's just the amp for a Strat and a Fender. If you want to have the Stevie Ray tone and Jimi Hendrix Stevie Ray tone, Robin Trower, but it works very fine with any other guitar if you can adjust it, and because it has a compressor in it that makes playing blues right. So if tomorrow I bring with me, if I have like an amp that it doesn't crank up at the volume I want, it's just too clean or too mellow, I just put I use the Blues Power as a boost, you know?
A bit like a hot plate, something we use a hot plate.
Something that gives a little contour around the notes. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And JJ also uses it as well for like, he try always clean.
Mm-hmm.
And then put it on. Sometimes we leave it always on, you know, and we just adjust the volume for gain, for solos and stuff like that, and comping. Otherwise, I have a wah pedal lately.
Oh yeah.
I play Wire in a couple of songs. Oh, just cool. To add another color. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have an old Wah from Thomas Hogan. It's the crybaby before he became James Dunlop.
Oh, really?
It's crazy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He's just like, he's not true bypass, so he divorced the sound as soon as you put it. But it's okay because the Wahs always tend to be louder than.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. But he doesn't open much. He doesn't have that mix of effect, very like in your face. He's just a little bit blended. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's perfect for blues, you know.
Mm. That sounds great. When you guys are gigging, when you're on tour and stuff, from the videos I've seen, it always looks like you're just having the most fun when you're on stage. And you kind of go in and out of doing some covers and lots of your original stuff. Do you set list down? Like, do you do the same set list for a bunch of gigs in a row? Or do you do it each night?
We do it each night. We do it each night because I understood in this few years of experience of playing live that I noticed how the song, like sometimes that they don't work in a room. It's strange to say that, but some songs don't work in this room here or for this crowd. So even though we love to play the same set list, it would just ease the work very much. I see the crowd, I see the room. I talk to the guys. I think we should do this, and that tonight. He said, yes, that's what we do tonight. So I have a list of songs.
And
I have a great app for that. I recommend everybody. I think it's no secret because I keep telling everybody it's called Setlist Maker. Now it got very expensive. By the time I bought it, it was like all free or very cheap. Mm-hmm. It gives you a list. You put a list on a database of with all the notes, like for example, when I do a set list, all right, I need some parameters that I need to respect. I need to see everybody must sing the right amount of songs. There should be an highlight, a limelight moment for each musician.
Okay.
There should be, you know, there are musts that it makes the show successful. You see, okay, there must be a moment of a harmonica, a moment of there must be a moment featuring good singing, a ballad. And this and the interplay and a little of the circus moment where we play like a little bit silly. So I highlight this in different colors of notes, and this app literally puts you the set list in a way that you can see everything. You'll see, okay, the set list is made because for this show all the parameters are fulfilled, like all the checklist is done, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's why I work quickly. But otherwise, if I, for whatever reason, I don't want to use it, I know exactly what to do. Just think 2 minutes and write it down.
Yeah.
We save a lot of paper just sending set list with our smartphones. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and so going back to you and your brother, did you play together when you were kids?
Yes. Yes, we did. Yeah. I started music. I started first. But 1 year later or two, he was asked, like he expressed desire to play drums. Mm-hmm. So my dad bought him a very rudimental drum kit. He was like 11 when he started. And we started jamming, but then we lost interest because we were teenagers, like everybody on his own thing, you know.
Yeah.
Then we have like a massive comeback on music. I was like about 16 and he was like, no, I was 17, he was 13. And I said, okay, I want to be a musician now. I knew it, that I wanted to be a musician. And I was bringing music more and more at home. So he got involved. And he was also playing more and more. He started, you know, he dropped the drums a little bit for tennis, my brother, to play sports.
Right.
Then he got back and he said, I want to maybe play guitar or bass. I don't know, stuff like that. But then he got back on drums and he started gigging right away with another turn of mind, another mentality, and it was there that we started to jam together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very much like jamming, exploring, listening music together. But of course I had my, like back then the difference of age was bigger than now, you know, so I had my circuit of musicians. Mm-hmm. I didn't let him play much because I had like my own like drummer from my band, you know, just like they were two generation almost, you know. Mm-hmm. He hang out with his friends, I hang out with his friends. But always curiosity about music, like exchanging, listen to this, listen to that. Yeah, of course. And then I moved out of the country and he stayed and he started working like a madman in Italy. as a drummer, session player, and I was like doing my tour in Europe in the meantime. We joined ourselves again. We met again in the UK, actually, in 2016.
Yes, did you go, you went to Spain, is that right?
No, I went to the Netherlands first. And okay. I stayed there almost 4 years. And I went to France for 4 years and more. And then my brother was already moved to the UK. He moved when he was 23. Yeah. He was doing very well. I said, why don't you come over here and we do something together? I said, I'd love to. I'd love to. And we just, I just moved there, you know. I just moved here. I mean, to the UK, he introduced me already to a whole bunch of people. He was doing residencies. He was doing very well. He did very well. And no mistake, but say, let's play some blues. Can you believe we were playing EDM?
Oh, really?
Music and pop music, yes.
Oh, wow. Like sessions?
No, my own stuff. My own stuff. I used to write songs like electronic pop, stuff like that. Very chart pop, electro pop. Yeah.
Is that where you got your basis in music production?
Well, I loved it. I still love pop music. You know, I love I don't know. I'm very careful of saying what I like or not in a public podcast. A lot of blues hardcore listeners can really think I'm a bit quirk. I don't know.
Yeah, but I listen to a lot of different stuff. I mean, I listen to a lot of blues, obviously, but also gypsy jazz, all the way through to like heavy metal.
Exactly. You know, I mean, there's no frontier to the good music. Exactly. From classical to from classical to heavy metal.
Yeah,
there's all spectrum. Then it's circular, because heavy metal sometimes is very similar to classical music, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you and your brother first got to London, were you both just doing music full time? Like, were you doing all the jam sessions, all of that kind of thing?
Yes, we've all always been doing one type of job, which is the musicians. We never did anything else. We cannot do anything else at this point.
I mean, but that's a hard life, isn't it? Like, it's a hard job. I guess now,
it's good, but it's been hard. But it was hard, because we were like nourished by dreaming about like doing cool stuff with the music, you know, to the point, I don't know, but a lot of musicians who are listening to this now, they understand that when you have such a driving passion, all you need is just like do music from day to night. And if you don't earn money, if you just like eat one hot dog a day, stuff like that, you know, it just doesn't really matter, because if you just like, you can have a decent life, a lot of sacrifice, you don't have friends, your girlfriends like drops you, dumps you because just like, you don't have a life, or just like everybody thinks what's your regular job side when you straighten up, stuff like that. But from the inside, we always been like the sort of dreamers that like, okay, all I want to do is just make music. The rest doesn't matter. It's just like a mission, not a mission. It's just like, that's it. You know, there's a lot of things that I should do, which is like trying to make money. But instead I spend the night producing music, because that's what I want to do. You know, that's what happened. You just, we were miserable but very fulfilled. Like, basically all we want to do is chat, always make music, do jam for 50 quids, 40 quids, you know, just like, yeah, spend time with musician, have consideration, show your licks to people, show your vocal chops, like, oh, this cover and this is all that mattered back then, and still does. But of course now it's different, because the business is good. Yeah. And you know what? Can I tell you something? Before, like, music was just the reason to escape your problems. Mm-hmm. All the fact that you're living far from your family, for, you know, you just play music. You cannot wait to go on stage to shut everything off and play some music, or just practice in your house for hours, because you delay, you know, thinking how shitty your condition is. And then, now for us, music is just the only moment where we can really have a moment of break.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, just like I my phone is on airplane mode. I don't send emails. I don't have to deal with people. I don't have to deal with accounting and tax form to fill up, stuff like that, you know, and sending rosters to everybody, like call sheet and blah, blah, blah. It's the only moment where, like, I don't have to deal with a human being, if not just my soulmates in the band, and just express myself, like reconnect to the primordial feel, which is like playing solos and singing and playing music, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys, I mean, it's rare to see a band of your size that is still kind of run in such an independent way, free of like any kind of labels and things like that.
We are not like this by choice or sort of ethics and stuff like that, because when we will see someone who wouldn't work with us, a label, we really are open to everything. That's what I'm saying. Just that we are not doing this because of our sort of ethics. No, we need to must be indie, stuff like that. The thing is that if you don't do it yourself, you're waiting for somebody else to do it for you. It's just like you wait forever. I've been waiting forever, just like to wait for someone, because I've been a terrible guy in organizing like gigs, planning a tour. Yeah. I say I shouldn't be doing this, but then again, you don't do anything, you know. You grow up and they say there's much potential could be done if only there's a good mentality here, you know. Me and my brother, the brotherhood is just like great, because me and him are growing every day with the same mentality and getting better and better, just learning from the past mistakes and talking to each other and saying, yeah, we should do this, and you see, we can achieve that. And JJ and Steve also are on the same wavelength. We all are on the same wavelength. We all love the system we do. If we don't like something, we say it and we try to get better, because it requires a little bit of like experience, a lot of it wasn't always like this, you know. I guess it comes in the right time, because I was very stubborn. I've been very stubborn. Oh, I don't think this is the way. Which is terrible for a business-oriented mind, right? Just being stubborn and being convinced of your own little world. While I know what I want, and I'm very like straight, but I'm very open to changes now, and that's what helped. And my brother too. My brother's the same. So we accept everything, and actually, if a guy comes up and says, guys, I want to sign you up if you just started to play blues and singing in Italian, I would have told you 10 years ago, I would have said, nah, I don't want to do that. But I would value the situation. I would at least value it. You know, that's a big change, you know. Of course, I don't want to sing blues in Italian. No, I don't want to scare my fans. No, but I value everything, you know. Everything must be valued. Because that's how you get a dynamic mind and a dynamic, you get to know a lot of people. A lot of people respect you because they're transparent, you know. You don't impose any of your, I believe though, in a moment of our career, I don't know if you can keep up expanding and being indie, because literally at the moment.
How much longer is it possible? Because I think you must be getting to the point where it's, you're getting bigger than what you can handle in terms of the business side of things.
Yeah, it's just we don't have a private life at the moment. Mm. Yeah, it's just like a mess, but it's a good mess. I think it's due time. Like in due time, we will need to have a team if we keep getting like, and I hope so. Yeah. And everybody's just on a little role. I don't want to get back more on the composing side. She was what I love the most is just compose and produce music and play in the evening. That's what I care the most. So let's see. But I tell you, man, there's worse in life.
Of course.
There are worse stuff in life than filling tax forms and doing stuff like that. Especially if you do it for your own project. I mean, you will do it with another spirit, you know, because you know that it's your own thing you're cultivating, you know, and It's just like this rewarding, and I found my inner peace. So if I have to keep up the whole life like this, I'll do what I must do, you know.
Well, that's good to hear, man. That's good to hear. I got one more question for you, if that's cool.
Yes, no worries.
You're obviously a virtuosic guitarist and piano and keys player. What was the kind of process for you to get to the level that you've got at guitar? Like, were you practicing every day? Did you learn when you were really young? What was the kind of process?
Yeah, I wanted to be a guitar hero, of course, when I was a teenager. And I studied a lot of technique. You know, that what they say about the 2 years of madness, I had those two years of... I remember, like, when I was 19, okay? I used to wake up at 8 in the morning. And it was already evening when I, like, let the guitar on the guitar holder for the first time. I just spent 12, 13, 14 hours on the instrument every day to the point of hating yourself, hating music, hating the instrument, hating the old world, you know. I remember my mom used to call me, say, "It's ready for lunch," you know. In Italy, lunch is a big thing, you know. So lunch time, you know, and I say, okay, I'm coming. Then I used to eat lunch and go back to practice, practice. And then it was dinner time. I remember already dinner time. And then exhausted. I remember being worn out, going to bed with what I used to study was like metronome, you know, the music school approach, like the Berkeley approach, like we would say John Mayer, like. I wanted to be a jazz player, you know, and I attended a college of music. So what I did is studying every style possible, like from jazz to Latin jazz, rock, hard rock, you know, and you have phases also. There's a moment of bebop, and for a year long or 6 months, only bebop, like transcription of Charlie Parker's solos and put it down on the sheet. Even if it requires 1 week to take down a few bars, I was deep in, but shut off completely from the world. And I wanted to be a complete, like, session guitar player. You know, my heroes were Robin Ford. When I was young, was Robin Ford, Larry Carlton. You know these guys,
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. These were my heroes. Of course, I have a big crush on Stevie Ray Vaughan. That's what I wanted to be, you know, a big session player, like playing every style and know the chops, you know, and know the chords, know how to play diminished scale on a 13 flat 9 dominant chord, you know, just like all this stuff, you know. But then I dropped a little bit this model because I started to feel more for like songwriting and lyrics and artists in general, like the delivery of the whole vibe rather than the singularity, the little note by note process, you know. So I have a big background, but I drop it all out the window and see what's the real me. What am I? What I really want to do? I don't want to be able to emulate everybody. I just want to be one guy doing the right thing that is more right for me. So it took a while, you know. When you scroll off all this school mentality, Berkeley school mentality, it takes a while before you find your own identity. So that's why also I was searching, you know. I finished school and I started playing new soul, you know.
Yeah.
And then the singer dropped and I was the singer. Oh, wait a minute. Who writes song? Well, I guess me. And I start writing songs, you know. And that's how it started, you know. The first gig was a tragedy as a lead singer, you know, for me. It just, like, they didn't throw me tomatoes, but almost. I was in the Netherlands. I remember that gig. I sweat. I wasn't that, like covering sweat. Like, I swear to God, never was, like, just because I was stressed, you know. But I did it. And I said, okay, it's going to be better next time. Don't worry, guys. Calming my other band members. And that's how it goes, to the point that, you know, it's like the blues, you know. You start with modern blues, like all the youngsters, like, oh fuck, I love Joe Bonamassa, I love Eric Gales, which is great. But then the more you get into the blues, you go backwards, you know. You go backwards. Yeah. It's just, wait a minute, this is Albert King. All right, wait a minute, this is a BB King. Oh, and then you go, oh, T-Bone Walker, you know, and you go to the point you just play Delta, just Delta, yeah, because you think the absence of what you want.
Yeah,
that's it. That's it with the music. I started out wanted to be a fusion guitar player, you know. I just want everything and bring art. But then I found that, okay, there's much more you can give with much less. You see what I mean? Growing up is about this, just economy and just find your identity without using a lot of tools because you've been using them, you know. So that's it.
Well, thank you so much for giving us some time. I really, really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome.
All the best for the shows coming up, and have a safe trip to Portugal.
Thank you very much.
All right, man. Take care of yourself.
Are you fully fretboard confident? Do you know where the notes are, how they connect, and how they move up and down the strings? My latest book, The Triad Method, is all about using simple three-note shapes to completely unlock the fretboard. This book is absolutely full of light bulb moments that are going to demystify the neck three notes at a time. I've compiled a huge number of diagrams, shapes, and exercises based on over 10 years of teaching this stuff to make it as simple as possible. Download The Triad Method and see for yourself today. Link is in the description below.